Thank you. It's 10:05. Good morning. It's 5 Live. Victoria Derbyshire with you on this Tuesday morning. She taught at the same high school near Hebden Bridge in West Yorkshire for 11 years. But in January this year, Leonora Rustamova was suspended and later sacked. She lost her job for writing a book called Stop, Don't Read This, that ended up being published on the internet. It featured 5 of her pupils at Calder High, all teenage boys. It featured herself, fellow teachers, and the head of the school. It contains, amongst other things, a lot of swearing, a student flirting with her, and compares 2 teenagers to gorgeous Mr. Gay UK finalists. You'll hear an extract from the novel in the next few minutes. Leonora Rustamova has never spoken about what happened until now. This is her first interview about what she did and the reasons why she did it. Leonora, good morning to you.
Good morning, Victoria.
Tell us why you feel you now want to speak out.
Well, I was suspended on the 19th of January very suddenly, and the terms imposed on my suspension were very strict. I wasn't allowed to speak to anyone in my community or my school community or express any opinions in the media. And after there was a lot of attention in the media, it was very difficult and frustrating sitting at home, remaining silent. And this is really the first chance that I've had to actually give my side of the story.
Do tell our listeners, do sum up for our listeners what your book is about.
The book actually came about, I have to go back to September 2007 for this, when I was given this group of boys. They were a very challenging group, in fact, probably the most challenging group of students I've ever had. They were in the last year of school, they were on work placements for 3 days a week, and they just came into school for the last 2 days. And they'd done the GCSEs in year 10, so the year before. That's the fourth year for old people who are listening. And they weren't really expected to survive through the last year. And I was given the group to teach for English, and I tried to get them interested in all sorts of books, all manner of short stories, and they refused to get involved. They really weren't interested. They were very disaffected. And in the end, in desperation, I asked them what they would listen to, and they said that they'd listen if I wrote a story about them. And that's really how it came about.
Well, thank you for explaining that. Tell us what the book is about, the content of it.
Well, I mean, I should say to start with, it's absolutely terrifying having to write a story for probably the most difficult audience in the world, which is disaffected teenage boys. I mean, they're nationally quite famous for being a problem area for engaging in literacy. And when I'd agreed to write this story, I was willing to try anything to get them involved in reading and to get them interested in books. But I got home and sat down and had to try and think about this story. They actually prescribed it themselves. They said they wanted it to be about them and about how they feel about school and their normal daily school life, and then to make something exciting happen, so to invent some sort of a fiction. And when I got home and sat down and had to actually think about how to write this, it was quite terrifying. And I tried to palm them off to start with by writing a jokey story where I made them all into woodland animals. And wrote a story called The Woodland Massacre, which was quite ridiculous. They were very offended by it, and it wasn't what they wanted at all. So then I actually followed their prescription and tried to write a fictional version of them, how they were perceived by teachers at school, which wasn't very positively at the time, and to give them some sort of opportunity for self-reflection and to just get involved in a book.
Were you comfortable with them effectively dictating the terms of their lessons?
Well, they were a very unusual class, Victoria, I have to say. I mean, I've built up quite a reputation over the years for dealing with difficult students, and very, very much involved in the welfare of students and encouraging them in their education. And I'd got to the stage with them after trying, all the usual sort of books that do engage disaffected readers. I'd got to the stage where I really wanted them to know that they were an important group. They were very intelligent boys, but not remotely interested in education. And I wanted them to know that I was prepared to bend over backwards, really, to get them involved and to show them how important it was.
And the point was, you would write this stuff about them and they would read it. They would read this kind of work.
Yeah, they were really into it, actually, from the start. I mean, they weren't, as I said, they weren't at all impressed with the Woodland Massacre, but they were really into the story from the start. I mean, it's kind of interesting, isn't it, to read something that's written about them. And I did try and you know, get inside their heads, and I tried to explain how they were perceived in school. But really, you know, because I didn't know them very well, I had to go by sort of, you know, national problems that there are for children with truancy and smoking and, you know, swearing. There is quite a lot of swearing in the book, but I have to say there's no more swearing in it than your average junior yard playground at school.
Okay, our listeners probably need to have a bit of an idea of the content of the book. You're going to read a short extract for us, and
I think
you'll be changing some of the strong language and, of course, changing the names of any pupils referred to.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to read a little bit from the end of the first chapter, which really, the first chapter starts just with descriptions of the boys as I saw them and how they were generally perceived. So I'll just read the end of the first chapter because it sort of sets the scene. So that's the group. Five wild childs in their last year of school, and me and mine, the only girl, and from a very different place. I'd never met anyone so annoyed with education as they were. They were sick of teachers squaring up to them with their flat eyes and their power shields. They'd wanted rid of them for a long time, and it didn't look like it was going to be much longer. By the end of the first week back in September, they had enough detentions lined up between them to start their own school. Where do you go from there? It was never boring being in a class with those guys, but it was more like an acid trip than a class. For a start, you could never even be sure how big it was, which is a fairly typical problem on a trip, so I'm told. Sometimes the class was as big as one person when the exclusion room had taken its cut, and sometimes it was like bring a friend day and they were followed in by sullen mates who'd been spat out of the system somewhere else. Sometimes there was Jacob, who's another story altogether, but he kind of fits the mould, even though he's younger, so we let him stay. I like the way the boys treat Jacob. It shows their softer side. And in the early days of our English lessons, anything that showed their softer side was useful, because they didn't show it to me. It was funny how the boys turned up. Not like it usually is in our school, with a line-up by a door after a bell. It sometimes felt like I never actually saw the boys arrive. I'd be walking with one, and then suddenly there'd be three of them, and everything kind of became a group. Like the unspoken communication was strong in that gang. Like everyone knew the plan without discussing it, in school anyway. Maybe we should have realised that every school day can't be just another normal school day every day. Sometimes there has to be a one-off. This one was going to be different, and they were going to be in the thick of it. I remembered afterwards walking happily along the library corridor in formation with the boys before all the madness started, smiling a smile to myself and thinking, I wonder if they know they're my favourites, and I wonder if they know why. I might have even wondered why myself back then, before all the madness started, because really, at the start of the year, the boys came across as little more than charismatic rats. So much for first impressions.
And when you showed the first 30 pages to the head teacher, what did he say about it?
Well, when I started reading the story to the boys, they got very involved in it from the start, and being a difficult audience, the material had to be quite risque, really, to give them an excuse to listen to it and accept it. So really, when you're a 16-year-old boy and you're disaffected about learning, you know, story time is one of those things that's for small children, isn't it? So it had to be a bit that way. So after the first five chapters, I gave it to my head teacher just for his approval and explained about the effect it was having on them. And he was absolutely delighted with it. He described it as a triumph. He thought it was a fascinating project, and that it was a good method of involving these sort of children.
So he really liked the way you were trying to engage them. Did he comment specifically about the content or the language or the way you describe these pupils?
Well, he did know the group. He knew the group very well because they were often in trouble. I mean, these sort of boys often ended up with the head teacher for very different reasons. And He gave it a complete green light. He asked if he could help in any way. He said that he wanted to come along and talk to the boys about it because that would give him an opportunity to have a very different conversation with them to the ones that he usually has. And he was keen for them to get something good out of school, and he was keen for them to be engaged.
Well, appearing on the internet. How did that happen? How did it end up on the internet?
Well, it was a simple internet mistake, really. It was never intended to go on the internet. It was certainly never intended to be a published work. As I say, it was only written for an audience of five. In conversations with my head teacher, he did suggest that it would be nice at the end of term to actually bind it up and make it into, you know, some sort of a commemorative book to give to the students when they left school, you know, as a little keepsake. We didn't actually get to the end of the story by the time they left school for various reasons of exclusions and that sort of thing. So I actually finished it off in the summer holidays when I was away on holiday with my family. And I'd looked into the costs for actually getting it bound into a book. It's tremendously expensive to do that in this country. And I asked my husband, who's actually Russian, if he knew of any way that I could print up a few copies cheaply. And he came up with the idea of using a print-on-demand website. I left the story with him when I came back to England after the summer holidays, and he arranged for them to be printed and sent them to me at home. And it was a pure internet mistake that it actually ended up still available on the self-publishing website for some time after that.
And who discovered it, or how was it discovered, and what did that lead to?
Well, I mean, I'd pretty much forgotten about it by the time January came around. When I'd actually got the copies of the book, I gave them to my head teacher. Well, I gave a copy of it to my head teacher to show him in September last year, you know, just for approval and to see the finished product. And I didn't actually give the copies to the boys until a month after that. And he said he thought it was a lovely gesture, he was very pleased with it, and then I never really thought anything else about it. My husband did say that if we needed to print off extra copies, if the boys wanted extra copies for their family, I think Travis asked for an extra one for his birthday, then we would be able to print off extra copies, and we thought that the availability was just password specific and that it wouldn't be available to anyone else. So I knew it was actually on the internet but didn't realise it was available. And in January I gave a copy of it to our school caretaker who there is a fictional caretaker in the story, and we'd talked a bit and he was kind of interested in it, so I gave him a copy to read. And then there was an internal complaint from another member of the senior staff at school about the book, who'd realised that it was actually available on the internet, and Anna was suspended from that point.
And did you agree with that suspension? Because if it's on the internet, then you've effectively breached parent, pupil, teacher confidentiality.
Well, I was utterly stunned when I was suspended. I mean, myself, I've worked at the school for nearly 11 years, and other teachers who've worked there for longer, we've never known of a suspension of a teacher in our school in living memory. So it was a huge surprise to me. I had no idea when I went into the meeting with my head teacher on the Monday morning what the meeting was about. I didn't know. I knew it was serious. I had to have my union rep with me. And within 4 minutes, I was suspended. I was told I wasn't allowed to communicate with any staff or any parents, anyone, students, anyone from the community or the media. And I removed the book instantly from the internet. Well, my husband did. I never actually even saw it on the internet site. You know, it was just a mistake. And, you know, when I was at school, I think we had two computers in our school and both of them were about the size of a piano. We never got used to the IT world. And I think for a lot of staff, it's kind of taken us over. And, you know, we're not really aware of the intricacies and the implications of that sort of thing. And really, I would have thought from just a small mistake like that, a suspension was quite a severe reaction.
Had you ever been disciplined before?
I'd been in trouble once or twice before at school for small things. I'd never had any actual formal discipline. I had been in trouble once for shouting at a colleague when I was you know, dealing with a child who was very upset and the child was being shouted at, and I can't bear seeing children bullied. So I did have one incident a year before where I'd had a bit of a verbal warning for that. But generally speaking, you know, I had just been promoted in school to be the social cohesion coordinator, which is a very important role in school. And was crucial to our school improvement plan, and it was also quite a challenging role because we have got problems in the school with social cohesion. So, you know, if there'd been anything, any sort of risks with me, then I certainly wouldn't have been given that role.
But I wonder if you do accept that even though you say it was an inadvertent occurrence that the thing ended up being published, nevertheless, yeah, it was published, and that does breach data protection. And for a teacher, that is wrong, that's inappropriate, that's unprofessional.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a mistake, yeah. And, you know, I would never have willingly put the book on the internet. It was an oversight. Things like this do happen fairly often in school. You know, it's a very busy job. Things like this go on. Really, if it had been a breach of data protection, then it would have been a breach of data protection for it to go out in book format into the community as well. My head teacher didn't realise that at the time either. And I think really as its readership had probably been, including the boys and their families, it had probably had a readership of about 15, 20 people by the time I was suspended, all within the school community, and all, you know, who could have read it as a book itself. So, you know, I think all the publicity and all this sort of thing could have really been avoided if it had just been dealt with in-house.
Let's bring in the Travis that you mentioned earlier, 17-year-old Travis Downs, yeah, who is one of the pupils who appeared,
yeah, not doing any work
in this
here.
Book. Travis, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming on the programme. What did you think when you read the chapters of this book that featured you?
Yeah, I thought it was excellent. I thought it was, at the time, I thought it was a fairly accurate descriptions, and I thought, in all, it was a really good book and a really good way of getting us to read, and it did work.
Had you ever read a book before that?
No, not on my own. It was the first one I ever read.
So this is the first book that you took home to read on your own?
Yes.
And how flattering was it to read a book that featured you as one of the main characters?
I thought it was excellent. I thought it was brilliant, the fact that a teacher was willing to do something, go home and work on something for us rather than just for once giving us loads of crap and insulting us. And it was good to have a teacher to care about us enough to go and write about us.
Mm. And did that get you into reading after that? Did you read other books?
Yeah, I've read a few now since then.
What kind of books have you read?
Mostly ones about building things and doing things like survival guides and like how to build your own buggies and go-karts and stuff.
And did you show the book to your parents? Were they happy with everything? Were they comfortable?
My mum loved it. She read it as soon as I got it home, and my dad read it a couple of weeks later when I brought it over to his.
And what did he think?
He also thought it was excellent. He thought it was one of the best books he's ever read.
What about when it was published on the internet? Did that change how you felt and how your parents felt or not?
Not at all. Out of every single person I know in the book, there's only one person whose parents actually have a problem with the book. Everyone else who's in it is themselves, and their parents are happy for it to exist and happy for it to be on the internet.
And why does that one set of parents, what is their objection particularly?
The fact that their son's name is mentioned, they just don't approve of it. But at the time it was written, he was old enough to consent himself, and he does approve himself. It's just his parents that don't.
Right, okay. And Leonora, in terms of the issue of consent, effectively you felt you'd been given consent because these boys said to you, write a book that features us.
Well, it's kind of a difficult one, Victoria, because as I said before, it was never intended to be on the internet. You know, it would have been quite a different story if it had been actually intended for publication. So, you know, the issue of consent didn't really come up. I mean, I just wouldn't have dreamed of making something publicly available without the permission of parents. I would think that would be highly disrespectful. It was just a mistake.
Mm. I've only been able to read three chapters of the book, and that's what I've been given. I understand that later on in the book it talks about one of the pupils fantasising about you. Is that true?
It's actually in the first three chapters there. It mentions one of the students who, when he's in the lessons and he's being disruptive, he flirts with his teacher. And then there is another allusion to that later on in the story, where I actually end up as injured in some of the adventures that go on, and it says something about that he's probably reviewing his position on the old sexual fantasy that he used to quite like hinting at in happier times. When you get a group of boys who've been working on construction sites for 3 days a week and then come back into school, it's quite hard for them to slot back into the role of being children and the role of being at school. I didn't actually punish the students for when they made cheeky comments, but as our relationship improved and as we got to know each other, mainly through the work that we were doing on this book and discussing, you know, how they were going to survive to the end of term and how they were going to move on to a positive next step, I actually made a reference to it later on in the story just to show how far we'd come, because those kind of comments stopped very quickly after we managed to improve our relationship.
Is that true, Travis?
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. I mean, I think I'm hearing you say, you know, these are 16-year-old boys, and okay, you're acknowledging that hormones are raging. They've got this 2 days a week in school, 3 days on a work placement, and in order to engage them, you are having to use adult content, effectively, to treat them as adults.
Yeah, that's right.
Travis, is that how it was to you?
Say something, Travis.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I know most of the boys as well. I didn't personally feel like that, but I know a lot of them did. And I was there when they were making those comments and stuff. And they later on did stop making those comments and they did get more grown up about it. But at first, they were just ridiculous.
Yeah, we had the issue with them that, you know, they had so many detentions. They were in trouble and they got excluded a lot. And it just seemed like, you know, because they were a very unusual group, it just seemed like that wasn't really going to be the way to actually get them involved in reading. And it is my job to, well, I saw it as my job to, you know, try and get them involved in literacy before they left school, and to develop some sort of interest in books. And I wanted them to realise, you know, that a book's like a world that you can fall into, but it gives you opportunities to learn about yourself along the way. So really, you know, that's where it came from. If you look at sort of, oh, sorry, were you going to say something?
No, I was just going to, all I was going to do, I hope you'll stay for a few more minutes, because I've got so many comments from listeners that I'd like to read from you, and I was just going to read a couple now, and they're from both sides of the argument, if you like. This is from a fellow teacher who doesn't give their specific name. Give that teacher her job back. Education needs teachers with such passion and interest in their pupils. Well done to her for creating an environment in which underachieving boys could strive. It's a shame that a so-called member of senior management could have had such a terrible attitude. I admire her. And this from another listener. This woman's extracurricular relationship with vulnerable young men is of serious concern. She is an inappropriate person to have any influence over vulnerable boys, and as a professional, her motives are of concern.
I think on that front, the vulnerable, just because we're misbehaving, just because we're angry and got in trouble all the time, doesn't make us vulnerable at all. We're far from vulnerable. We would completely do the opposite of what anyone ever told us to do, which would probably make us more, well, not even remotely vulnerable.
Yeah.
We weren't pinned down by anyone, weren't done anything. The only thing that ever got us done was really suspensions. So in a way we're vulnerable, is vulnerable to teachers abusing us with detentions and suspensions for things we half-time didn't even do sometimes.
Okay. We'll talk more after the... Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say that obviously my relationship has carried on with these boys after them leaving school. I actually work with Travis at the Venture Scouts. He encouraged me to join as a volunteer leader, and I've been working with him there. But the relationship involves, you know, I've helped some of the boys with their college placements and liaised with their tutors to help them transfer. And also one of the boys, until I was suspended, I was helping him with his parents' consent to retake his GCSE English and try and improve his grades. So they weren't really inappropriate relationships. They were more like mentoring roles that carried on.
Okay, we'll talk more after the news and sport and more comments from our listeners, particularly if you're a parent at the school, which is... Bernie on Tyneside says getting challenging teenage boys to actually read, it's fantastic. Unconventional maybe, but it worked. She should not have been sacked. She should be rewarded. Mark is a teacher in Birmingham. He says this woman has done a great job using common sense and initiative. PC nonsense does not work with these kids. We need more teachers like this. What a crazy scenario, says Rob. She sounds like a great teacher. I'd be happy to have her teach my kids. What a total overreaction. This woman sounds like a fantastic teacher who really connected with the pupils. Whoever it was who decided to sack her should be there answering questions on why they sacked her. Louise, a mum of two boys. How lovely to have a teacher who cares about her pupils. Give her her job back. Kate says, what a gifted, caring and intuitive teacher. However, I have an email here from a man who is a father of pupils at Calder High. It's not one of the pupils you taught, as far as I understand it. And he describes you in his email as a pervert. He goes on to say, she has corrupted our kids, she has got them drunk, she's given them crazy ideas, and she deserved to be sacked. Don't fall for her sob story. She's really bad news for a lot of youngsters around here. And as for her fondness for teenage boys, it's sickening. How do you respond to that, Leonora?
Yikes. Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of difficult to respond, isn't it? There was quite a lot in there. I should say, really, that this story was written for a very specific group of students. You know, it would have been a very different story if it had been written for other classes. I have been asked a few times how I would feel if a teacher had written a story like that about my own child. I have a daughter who's 14 at the moment, and had it inverted to say, you know, if a male teacher had written a story like that about your child, how would you feel? But really, I feel like if my child had got to year 11 in school and had still been so disaffected about reading and so incapable of accessing the curriculum, I would have felt far more upset about that. And I think that, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done to actually try and salvage something out of an education before it's too late. I did want these boys very much to get through to the end of their school year, so that they would actually have some sort of positive transition to the next stage. It's crucial, really, if you want to go on to college or you want to go on to training placements when you leave school, that you actually get through to the end. And towards the end, it was looking like, you know, they weren't going to survive until the end. And we did actually offer the boys a barbecue when they left school so that they could, you know, as an incentive, if they all got through to the end, then they would be allowed to come to a barbecue party.
Which I think is the reference in this email to them getting drunk. It was a barbecue.
Travis might be able to shed some light on the idea of me exposing these boys to alcohol.
I will ask Travis in a moment, but if I could just ask you as well, it was a barbecue at the end of the year with another teaching colleague who has also been suspended, as I understand it, and it was a sleepover and you took them home the next day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and all the parents were aware of where they were. They were quite happy for them to come along. I think pretty much the parents were appreciative of the support that we gave to their children while they were going through their last year of school. The other teacher who was suspended and is not going to be returning to his job. Even though he's worked for 30 years at Calder High School, he's had a glowing career, and he was actually our NUT rep as well. We held the barbecue at his house. He's also an ex-parent of the school. Both his daughters went to the school and he lives in the catchment. And we made sure, you know, our head teacher knew about these overnight stay, when was it, last June, so a year ago, and for it suddenly to come round and be an issue a year after he had knowledge of that, does seem a little unfair.
But why didn't you think it was inappropriate that five of your pupils stay over the night at you and your colleague's barbecue and his home?
Well, they were ex-students by then, and really, when you live in a small community like this, it, you know, and when your teachers who live in a community, it's much more of a kind of a blurred sort of issue, that, really. I mean, the neighbours' children all go to the school. As I said, my colleague Steve Cann, his daughters both went to the school. His house is always full of children from the school. It was going to be just a barbecue dinner to start with, but in the end it seemed like it was probably safer to have the boys stay over for the night and drop them back in the morning, because they often end up getting into trouble on the way to and from events. The parents seemed to think that was a good idea, and we just drove them home in the morning. There were five of them, you know. It was more like a party put on for them. It wasn't really us having a party with them. It was just, you know, giving them a venue for an end of term barbecue. So it just didn't seem to be too much of a problem at the time.
And was everybody well behaved? Nothing inappropriate happened?
They were lovely. Yeah, they were lovely. I mean, they were out playing football in the field. It was out in the countryside where we were. It's quite a countryside area, Hebden Bridge. They had a bonfire outside, and we cooked them food, and they came back in for food and had a bit of a chat. And they listened to my colleague, Steve, playing the piano, which is kind of cute. Actually gave me a fit of the giggles, because I just found it so incongruous seeing these boys and comparing what they were like when I first knew them as students and how they'd matured and how they'd changed by the time they left school. You know, it just seemed like a job well done, really, and it was a lovely evening.
Let's speak to Sonia, who is in Oswestry, and Gilly, who is in Birmingham, and then we'll hear from Wendy, Liz and John as well. Sonia, hello.
Hello, Victoria.
Yes, talk to Leonora.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to offer my support for Miss Rusty. I think what you've done...
Thank you so much.
I'm a voice in the crowd, and I do support what you've done. I've been reading comments and commenting on the Facebook status on Victoria's Facebook, and there's a lot of negativity around this. The way I see it, you've made a connection with these children, and it's worked. And all these PC people out there, I hope they never get in the position to have to struggle to look after a child that may be going off the rails and lose them. You've taken these boys back from out of the net and put them back on the road. And some of these guys might start writing in the future. So I think it's brilliant.
That's lovely, Sammy. Thank you very much. That's so nice of you to say.
Gilly, do you agree?
I'm afraid not.
I didn't think you would.
I'm not even one of the PC crowd, but I think you're sensitive. Well, I've got a 10-year-old son, and if he was written about by a teacher with whom I had trust, then I would be very upset, because that is in writing and that is there for life. And they may think it's cool at 16, but they may not think it's so cool when they're older and getting jobs. Because this kind of thing, especially being on the internet and being out there, now people will remember. And we'll remember the names, and I think there is a danger in that.
Do you accept that, Leonora?
Travis is there.
Well, go on, yeah,
his
Travis,
head
go on. Is it going? Well, could might you change your mind in 10 years? Might it affect you in later life?
I very much doubt it. Out of all the boys involved, I am the only one who people could actually distinguish as a character of the book because of the public. The publicity that I've done involving this. I've been on other radio stations and stuff, and that's had my full name on, where the other boys have only got their first names. You can't distinguish a person by their first name just because they live in Calderdale. There's loads of people named the same as them in Calderdale with that first name. And I don't ever see me ever getting bored of this book, because it's done me a favour. It's helped me mature a lot more and helped me keep in... helped me keep in school and helped me keep... going, really, and stop me from doing really stupid things, which I was starting to do before I started being taught by Miss Rusty.
Gilly?
I can see your point. You sound like a typical young man. Sure, it's not doing you any problems now. My only other point would be, I think I'd have been more impressed if you'd got the boys to write the story themselves, and maybe got them each to write a story. I mean, I'm lucky, maybe my son reads non-stop. But it's, if you want to encourage people and encourage them to write and have a disciplined mind, I think writing a story themselves about an experience or their lives would have had more impact than reading somebody else's words.
Gilly, thank you. John is a teacher in Belfast.
I couldn't agree more with Julie on that score, actually. Am I allowed to say?
Yes, of course you are. Yes, 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 please.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I couldn't agree more with Julie on that score, that if I could have got the boys to write a story themselves, that would have been far better. I did only have them for the last year of school, which is really only about 8 months. And I think the follow-on work that we would have been able to do with this book, if I'd taught them for longer, would have certainly included something like that. But at the stage when we started writing it, I couldn't even get them to sit down.
And also on the fact that a lot of us couldn't have written a book in any hope in hell. I mean, I couldn't write my full name till I was in year 8.
Julie, thank you for that. John is a teacher in Belfast. John, hello.
Hi, Victoria, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. What do you think of what this particular teacher has done?
Oh, well done, Miss Rusty. I just think it's great what she's done. You know, I am a teacher, and it's very clear, I'd imagine, that your previous caller there isn't a teacher. I'm not wanting to put her down. I know she's a parent, and I know that's great. I'm a parent too. But I think whenever you're a teacher working with boys who are maybe underprivileged or underachieving, you know, you've got to do all in your power to try to get them to take something in school. Like, I sometimes have a class of kids who just don't want to be there. You've got to do something to keep them in the classroom. So I just think it's great what she's done, and well done, Miss Rusty, should I call you. It's been absolutely superb what you've done, and just all the best for your future. And I would love to see you get back into school.
John, thank you. We'll talk to listeners in Banbury and Winchester if you can stay with us for a few more moments. Liz, hello. Wendy, good morning.
Hi.
Morning.
Yes, Liz, what do you want to say?
I just think she sounds like a fabulous teacher. Anything that you can do to get young people engaged. And as for the previous caller's comment about that it might come back to haunt the boys in later life, I think they should be very proud of themselves, the fact that they've turned themselves around. So I can't imagine that they would be embarrassed about it in the future. It is unfortunate about it being published on the internet, but you hear of exam results, forthcoming A-levels and things being accidentally published on the internet. It's a fact of life. But I just think she sounds fabulous, and it's a long time since I was at school, but I think I would have been a lot more engaged if I'd had a teacher like her.
Wendy, should Leonora Rustamova have been sacked?
Absolutely not, no. I used to work as a teaching assistant in a primary school. I don't do now. And I was put with children with special needs, especially in literacy and numeracy. And that lady that said about 10-year-olds should be taught to write rather than read the story, it's incredibly hard getting them to stay on task. And I thought what she did was absolutely brilliant. She listened to them, which is really important. Not many people do, especially if they've got behavioural issues like that. She respected them. She got the balance absolutely right. And I've got three teenagers myself, a son who was only diagnosed as dyslexic a year before he took his GCSEs, despite me telling the school that there was something wrong because he was very bright and would not engage in reading. And thank God he didn't go off the rails, and he's hopefully now waiting for his A-level results to go to uni. And
can I ask
you? I just think if he'd had a teacher like that, he probably would have done much better at English than he has done.
A number of listeners are saying, what would the response be if it was a male teacher writing about five female pupils? Is it different, Liz, because it is a female teacher with five male pupils?
Personally, I don't think so. It sounds as if Leonora has sort of spoken to the parents about it, and as they said, that the boys were old enough to consent. So I think this sort of sexual innuendo is diverting attention from the, I think the PC crowd probably just want something to complain about. I don't think it makes any difference which way around it was. The fact that she was trying to help these children, she could have just abandoned them and said, fine, just don't complete your last year at school, and then there'd be a group of people complaining that she was, you know, a poor teacher in that respect. So no, I don't think it makes any difference.
And absolutely, we're crying out for teachers, really good teachers, especially in secondary schools. And my three go to one of the largest secondary schools in the country. It's absolutely huge. And all, I think without fail, all the English teachers are ladies anyway. But, you know, people need to sit up and listen to what she's done and how she engaged them and the results she got. I mean, they're phenomenal. Lots of boys aren't on task. It's not just a handful. There are loads of them. And I've got a daughter who's a very bright girl, and you know, even she could have benefited from somebody like this lady.
I've got another email here, and it is from a parent at the school. First of all, they're unhappy that we've even allowed you to come onto the programme, Ms. Rustamova. It's a disgrace that you're giving publicity to this pervert who's been sacked for gross misconduct. She should not be allowed near children. She's telling lies. There are a lot of parents very upset about what's happened. Those of us who care for our kids don't want to shout about things, so we have kept quiet. But it's not true that any parents gave permission for anything.
That's a lie. Well, it's not. It's the parents who have disliked Rusty and have things said against her have repetitively said this. It's the parents that who agree with her have kept quiet, who have said that they're not going to get involved because they don't want to damage Rusty's case at the time, which is over and done with. And on the front of pervert, what grounds does she have to accuse of a pervert?
I think people take exception to the barbecue and sleepover bit.
Well, in which case, I know every single teacher at that school that I've talked to, I know have had at least one kid round at their house at some point during their time. It happens on a regular basis.
Obviously, we asked the head teacher of Calder High School, Stephen Ball, and the local education authority for an interview. They gave us this statement. It's from Paul Brennan, the acting group director for children and young people at Calderdale Council. The safety and well-being of all children and young people in schools is paramount. All adults working with them have a duty to adhere to professional standards of practice. This has been a difficult time for the whole school community. It is my hope that the pupils and staff of Calder High can now focus their full attention on their studies and continue to thrive and succeed in the future. The matter has now been referred to the General Teaching Council, who may choose to take further action. And that, I suppose, means, Leonora, that they may strike you off. Is that a possibility now?
Yeah, it is a possibility, yeah. I'll just have to wait and see. I gather there's quite a long queue at the moment to get your case heard at the General Teaching Council, and I suspect that a lot of that is to do with the new and very far-reaching child protection legislation about which we've never been trained in school. Obviously, I read a lot of this legislation while I was suspended, having not very much else to do and having a case to prepare. And I was horrified by how vulnerable we've actually been made as teachers by lack of training on such issues, which affects particularly people in a small community like this one, where the staff live alongside children. Because even having a parent who has a child at your school, round at your house, without permission from the local authority, is now a punishable offence.
Okay. We're going to leave it there.
Where does that leave people?
Because the news is coming. We thank you very much for your time this morning, both of you, Leonora Rustamova and Travis Downs, one of her pupils, and many more of you want to talk about this, so we will continue to talk about it a little later. It's Five Live, the news is next. On DAB Digital.